Greetings, one and all. Gardner Goldsmith here with you with Liberty Conspiracy Audios, bringing you a new one, and the music is tied to our theme. Thanks for finding our podcast at Podomatic, iTunes, or elsewhere, and I hope you'll spread the word if you like what we're discussing. This particular show is for people who are ever caught in the argument that some religious, in fact, many religious people, end up debating, especially if they're Christians. But some people will say, well, I'm not a Christian, but if you are a Christian, then I'll tell you what Christ had to say about your duty to answer to the dictates of politicians within the edifice of the state. And it's all about whether or not Christ was an anarchist or he might have been pro-government. Whether quotes from the Bible, as some Christian people might view them, would tend to support the validity religiously, and they might therefore think morally, the validity of the state, or the primacy of the individual to make his own choices. So, with that, we play you some music from Big Dipper. I love these guys. This is a song called Easter Eve. We'll see you soon. LG Grande here with you. Liberty Conspiracy Radio continues. I'll open up the Skype line shortly. It's Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. That's Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. And if you ever have any questions about the music we play in the show or music we play in the podcast, feel free. You can always contact me there. Or you can email me at libertyconspiracy@yahoo.com. That's libertyconspiracy@yahoo.com. Okay, so in the last segment, I brought up some information that probably is interesting for people who aren't just libertarian anarchists out there. You know, we are a small group of people, but I did it for a reason, intentionally. I was talking about, as most of us do for reasons, but this is a long-term reason on the show. I did it because not only is it April, we weren't able to get together at the very, very opening of April, but now we are. And this being April 5th going into the 6th, this gives us an opportunity to talk about April 15th, of course, so-called Tax Day, the IRS. What a service, isn't it? And also the morality of so-called government and whether or not you have an obligation to pay for something you never voluntarily asked to get, right? As I mentioned in the last segment, the Tax Foundation has figured out that so-called Tax Freedom Day is April 24th this year. That is based on the $4.85 trillion in taxes that federal, state, local, county tax takers take from people. But they neglected to include other things like the excessive burdens of political threats, otherwise known as regulations, to which people who own businesses and others who would like to shop with those businesses must comply. And those come out to about $2 trillion, according to the National Association of Manufacturers. And then if you add tariff costs, both direct tariffs and the costs that are incurred by consumers because they might not be able to buy those foreign products, they'll have to go with an American product. The American product allowed to be a little bit more expensive now because the government makes their competitor more expensive. That probably makes it probably another trillion. Who knows? So the total is at least $6.85 trillion. The 6.85 is 43%, but if you add on things like tariffs and other types of things like costs of extra time incurred in travel, transit, things like that because of government screw-ups on the roads, whether they're not plowing them right or they just don't maintain them right or they haven't designed them properly because there's too much traffic and causes too much traffic, then you probably have at least 50% of your life, if you're a taxpayer, being expended for taxes to the government. So that brings us to a story, and I think it's interesting. Tonight being the night of Easter, we get an opportunity to discuss the question of whether or not one is morally, religiously obligated to acknowledge the power of the state and to work within the state to try to redistribute wealth. Okay? So we started the show bringing up this tune by Big Dipper, Easter Eve. So let's get into that topic right now, shall we? All right. I mentioned I'm going to open up the Skype line. I want to give you a little introduction, then I'll open it up if you have comments. It's Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. This has been a long-standing debate, and I'll open it up by just mentioning a couple things that I have often brought up in conversations with people. I once had a conversation with a woman who was a very so-called devout Christian, and she wanted to talk to me about doing some tutoring, right? So I said, yeah, no problem. You know, I don't go to church or anything like that, but I'm familiar with some of the Bible. I understand certain things. I haven't studied it all that much. I'm not religious necessarily. But I said, you know, if you're a Christian, then, you know, I can easily tell you that, you know, Christ opposed the state. And so she said, no, that's not right. No, that's not right. Christ said to render unto Caesar what was Caesar's, right? Okay, so if you're familiar with that Bible quote, then you're probably aware that that is often brought up by people who claim that Christ was saying that you must pay your taxes. Now, this despite the fact that Matthew was a tax collector whom Jesus pulled out of his bad ways and ended up joining Christ as a disciple. He stopped collecting those taxes, crying, saying, he realized he was doing a bad thing, right? So he was taking the money that people were forced to pay at the threat of physical violence, kidnapping, imprisonment, starvation, seizure of other physical properties. He was taking that stuff that people had to give up based on the dictates of the Romans. So when I heard this, I said to this woman, no, I think you're misunderstanding Christ's point. Christ's point is when he says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, what, did he want Matthew to continue doing what he was doing? No, he didn't, because it was immoral. That's why he spoke to Matthew. And when he says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, he is trying to address a person with some intelligence who understands his larger point, which is, according to Christ, that there is no reason to render unto Caesar anything because the world is not his. Caesar is a political figure. He doesn't own anything within the state purviews that is legitimately his. He is not a legitimate ruler. God is the legitimate ruler. The kingdom of heaven, as they say. So the point is that there is nothing that you owe Caesar. You don't have to render unto Caesar anything unless Caesar gave you something from his personal belongings. Unless you took something personally from Caesar, which you have not. That's the point. And she was adamant. No, you are wrong. Christ said that we must abide by the commands of our political leaders. And I said, where are you getting that? So I had to do some research, right? Well, now, we know that the statement of Christ about render unto Caesar is a quote from Christ. But a lot of people turn to Romans 13:1, okay? And they'll say, well, in Romans, you just look it up, Romans 13:1, it says that you must do what your political leaders tell you, right? Quote, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. Now, that could be taken a couple different ways. Well, only the ones that God established. So are you talking about your religious leaders that you voluntarily choose? Or is this person saying that God established your rulers? This is what this woman was telling me. She said, well, God put the rulers over us. She's paraphrasing this, right? Romans 13:1. The authorities, I'll continue, the authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and you will be commended. For the one in authority is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servants, agents in wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. That sounds quite different than what Christ pushed forward, doesn't it? And you know why? Because Christ didn't say it. Paul said it. This is Paul speaking, not Christ. And some people even wonder whether it was Paul. We'll tell you about that in a minute. We continue Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. LRN.FM if you're streaming us. Podcasts at Podomatic and iTunes. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Good to have you here, everybody. And we continue discussing... Yeah, waited for that music pretty good. We continue discussing the subject that seems appropriate for Easter. The subject of Christ, Jesus, the historical figure. This song, of course, being the song Christian Says, how appropriate, from the band Tones on Tail, great band. They turned into Love and Rockets. I've mentioned them before. If you want to look for their album, it's a one-shot album, and it's great. This song Christian Says is terrific. So, but however, whether you're a Christian or you're not, this topic does come up. Sometimes people go after Christians because many Christians are small government people, and they're generally opposed to the heavy taxes. They want to impose taxes on people for what they think is good, for like defense. They think that is an appropriate thing for government to do. However, government is not appropriate morally. And however, if you try to discuss this with some Christians, they will say, well, you know, the state is sanctioned to protect your natural rights, so you have to give what the state demands for your protection. That's the founders believed this. Now, some people who aren't religious like to poke fun at the conservatives to say, no, Jesus was a socialist. And the conservatives say, no, Jesus would have been a small government conservative. Okay. We are here tonight to discuss whether or not Jesus was a socialist or whether Jesus was actually an anarchist. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, some people point to a particular portion of the Bible that they seem to think came from Christ in some cases. I've run into people who have said these things. And they seem to think that Romans 13:1 is a statement that supports the authority of the state over the people, which to me seems very strange, because the whole concept of Christianity is for you to fulfill your own moral, spiritual potential in the eyes of God, for you to know what is right and what is wrong, and to act in that way, to understand what the commandments are, and to do that which is correct. And if you have arbitrary authorities threatening you that you will have X or Y done to you, then that doesn't really allow you to make your own moral decisions about your life, and if you are a religious person, about your soul, right? So it just strikes me as strange that Christ would say, you know, why wouldn't Christ just say, yeah, do what the government tells you to do? I don't really need to tell you about anything. Just do what the government says. It's just what the government says, right? It doesn't seem to fit, right? It doesn't seem to fit, again, as I mentioned, with the, I think, very intelligent line from Christ, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. In other words, nothing is really Caesar's, because if you've been listening to me, I'm telling you everything's owned by God, right? So the state is just taking from you. The fact that Christ won over Matthew, took a tax collector and said, hey, man, think about what you're doing. And he said, yeah, this is not good, right? These types of things seem to run counter to the statement that I mentioned to you before that is sometimes brought up by some religious people, that you are supposed to be the subject of the governing authorities, as in Romans 13:1. So you've got to look into it, and you say, oh, well, of course, it makes sense, because the statement about rendering unto Caesar is attributed to Christ. Matthew says this is what he said. This other piece, 13:1, Romans, is Paul speaking. This is what Paul told people, supposedly. And there is even debate about that, as I mentioned before the commercial break. You go to Bible.org, Romans 13:1, 1-7, an interpolation. Here's a little quote for you. Virtually every serious commentary on the book of Romans has had to wrestle with the integrity of the last two chapters of the work, especially chapter 16. But this is not the only place in the epistle where Pauline authenticity, that's their term, Pauline authenticity, has been questioned. There are those who, for several different reasons, reject 13:1-7 as truly from the hand of Paul. One such interpreter, who has advanced some of the strongest arguments in favor of Romans 13:1 as an interpolation, a later insertion into the text, is named James Callis. Callis gives two general and three specific reasons for concluding that Romans 13:1-7 is an interpolation. In terms of the general observations, he says that it is likely that this portion is an interpolation because, one, it is well known that the ending of the epistle has been altered radically, and two, nowhere else does Paul speak about the Christian's relationship to the civil authorities. Yes, very interesting. Okay, now, I'd also like to add some information to this that I think would be valuable. And for that, I want to turn to a very, very good book by a man who has been a guest on this program. It is The Anarcho-Teachings of Yeshua, with a Y, Y-E-S-H-U-A, by Daryl Perry. If you get a chance, Daryl W. Perry, you probably know Daryl. He does news on the Liberty Radio Network. He was a great, great friend to me before and during and after my run for the Senate, which I wasn't really running. I was just trying to get an opportunity to speak in debates. And he's a great guy, Free State Project member. And if you get this book, if you have an opportunity, it's $2.99 on Kindle. I got it a while ago. And in fact, I've got my Kindle right here. It's one of those old Kindles, really old. And It's a terrific book. It's very well thought out and very well edited. You get a chance to check it out. Here's one of the things that he opens. He uses to open. He says, "One need only read the Hebrew Scriptures to see that from the time of the Exodus from Egypt until the coronation of King Saul, the Hebrew people lived in an anarchist society." Quote, "And the sons of Israel went up and down from there at time, each to his tribe and to his family, and they departed from there, every man to his inheritance. In those days there was no king in Israel. Each man did that which was right in his own eyes." End quote. That is the epitome of freedom and natural liberty. Also, if you read I Must Speak Out, The Best of the Anarchists, Ferb delivered that one to me via mail. It goes through the years that the tribes wandered in Egypt. They set up small pockets of people with little voluntary juries and things like that. They were tiny little self-governing entities. Now, to think that Christ, who came from this background and understood the lessons of the Old Testament, and I'm just talking about if he was a historical figure, to say that he would then say, "You must answer to the political authorities because they were placed over you," wipes out virtually everything that the Jews went through from the time they tried to get away from Egypt. Right? It makes no sense. And to ascribe the statement to Christ anyway is just sloppy. But some people do this. Also, some great quotes. Some great quotes from Darrell W. Perry. He's done a terrific job with this book. Remember, it's The Anarcho-Teachings of Yeshua. In fact, what I'm going to do when I turn this into a podcast, I'll put a link for the book into my show notes, okay? But if you get a chance, if you're online right now and you can grab it, it's $3. And it's really, really interesting. This is a really cool book. In fact, I should get Darrell on. I didn't even think of it tonight. I was doing a whole bunch of stuff, and I was like, oh, you know, I want to say this stuff. And I think Davi Barker, no, somebody mentioned, oh, Darrell mentioned. He's like, oh, maybe you'll bring up some stuff from the book. I'm like, yeah, of course I will, definitely. And I should get Darrell on. That'll be a great idea. Man, that'll be awesome. So I'll be interested to hear what other people have to say. But I think this is an important thing to consider, especially because we often hear things like, "In God we trust," Christian tradition among Americans. You hear various politicians get up there. They go to church. They walk out of places holding the Bible and all these things. And instead of actually thinking of these people as real people, who were fighting for better futures and for the moral integrity of individuals, which is what religion is about. Every individual has to come to this on his or her own. They seem to take religion as a supporter of the state, of this. It's like a bulwark on this giant edifice that they build, and you can't escape. It's only right and proper that you should think this way. It's tied together, the state and religion. They're one and the same, and you must respect both of the things that they say they tell you. That's what the politicians say they tell you. In fact, I'll play you something in the future from one of those hypocrites. Hour 2 of Liberty Conspiracy Radio is upon us. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thank you very much for joining us on the program live tonight. LRN.FM, if you're streaming us over the airwaves, thank you for listening. Podcast, iTunes, Podomatic, check us out. Tell your friends about us. Tweet about us. And if you want to reach me on Twitter, it's at Gard Goldsmith on Twitter. I'll check out my Twitter page shortly. And if you want to contact me on Skype, if you want to type a message, if you want to allow your voice to be heard by the audience out there, then just contact me on Skype. It's Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. I am Gardner Goldsmith. Yes, or Gard, if you want to call me that. Just don't call me Ray. Yeah. It's good to have you here, everybody, on this Easter Eve. Not necessarily Easter Eve, Easter night. But it's a beautiful night here in lovely southern New Hampshire. The moon has been peeking out. And I hope wherever you are, you're enjoying the evening. If you're listening to this through time displacement somehow, I hope as you're listening to us, you have your headphones on, you're listening to us in your car, you remember that you have kindred spirits out there, people who are inquisitive about a lot of different subjects. And in particular, the capacity of the human being to be able to do amazing things when allowed to do things that he wants to do, that she wants to do peacefully. And unfortunately, there are a lot of impediments out there. And some people look at religion as being one of those impediments. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think religion combined with the state is the key. I mean, a church can't say you are going to pay us unless they have the backing of the political authorities and the police, right? Unless it's a religious state. But the state is the one that can demand these things. So last hour, I opened up the conversation. I thought, you know, it was pertinent. We talked about how much the government takes from people, which I think if you add everything up, in addition to taxes, look at regulation, look at tariffs on foreign goods, which are also taxes, look at the different expenses that are incurred on people when they try to avoid those taxed goods, so they buy American instead at a higher price. I think it goes way beyond the 43% that I already calculated the numbers that began from the Tax Foundation on the amount of money that was taken out of the economy, $4.85 trillion, and I added on the $2 trillion on regulatory costs. But also, I thought it was important to talk about the tariffs. So if you think about all those things, I think you're easily at more than 43% of your time being spent, if you're a taxpayer, being spent to pay for different government expenses. Now, is that moral? Some people say, well, you accept this. Even some small government libertarians, as they call themselves, and they claim that they're not statists, but they are statists. They believe that the state is important and essential for maintaining some sort of order. They would probably have small spheres of states to compete so that if you didn't like one, you could probably go to another one. But it's still not real freedom. It's not total freedom. And so the question arises, some of the arguments that some people bring up on the small government side is that, well, you know, this is an American tradition and it would have worked if they had just abided by the Constitution and the politicians hadn't run rampant and tried to do so many things and taken advantage of their political positions to hand out favors and to regulate people's businesses and to stop competition and all these types of things, to wage wars and make money off of those things, you know, that sort of stuff, right? And of course, there are ideological reasons that people think the government should grow. Those are often pushed by many of the socialists out there. They think that there should be redistribution of wealth because there's an inherent unfairness somehow. I don't know how big a business has to be for it to become unfair, but at a certain point, whatever that subjective point is based on each socialist, then it's bad, it's evil, and it's taken advantage of people and exploited people, so government should be used to balance the playing field, as they say. Unfortunately, that is never the way that it works out. A handful of people are the ones who take advantage of that, and I'll play you the words of one of those people in just a moment. But I want to concentrate a little bit on one of the aspects of that debate, continuing from last hour, whether or not a religious leader, a religious figure, seen as the Messiah by some, as a historical figure by others, Jesus Christ, was or was not a socialist. Last hour, I mentioned some points attributed to Christ, the render unto Caesar quote, and another quote from the Bible that in Romans that some people who are religious who believe that there has to be acquiescence to at least some sort of small government, I don't know where that stops for them. I don't know how you jibe the idea that you must acquiesce to small government, but big government is somehow bad. But many conservative small government people say, well, no, you've got to abide by some sort of government's dictates. Okay, and they quote Romans 13:1, right? And yet, that was not Christ who said that. That was Paul who said that. And some people debate whether it was even Paul, or it was inserted afterwards by people who, hey, you know what? We're going to sort of put together the books of the Bible, and we'll slip some stuff in that helps support the king, right? Okay. So, then I referred to some information which is terrific stuff from our friend Daryl Perry's book. And if you get a chance, go on to Amazon.com. Check it out. Please do. It's called The Anarcho-Teachings of Yeshua, Y-E-S-H-U-A. And I read a bit of information about the Hebrews after Exodus that Daryl provided in his book. And I want to continue a little bit here in the beginning of this hour and open things up to you if you want to comment. It's Gardner and Doc Goldsmith on Skype. He says, a recurring theme in the teachings of Yeshua is love. But what is love? Right? Well, very good question. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Corinthians, quote, love has patience, is kind. Love is not envious. Love is not vain. Is not puffed up. Does not behave indecently. Does not pursue its own things. Is not easily provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness. But rejoices in the truth. Love quietly covers all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. End quote. Daryl continues, in short, if we are loving towards others, we are not being judgmental, and we are following the teachings of Yeshua, who warns, this is from Yeshua, do not judge that you may not be judged, for with whatever judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with whatever measure you measure, it will be measured again to you, end quote. So, Daryl says, saying do not judge is not speaking to not judging at all. It is speaking to not judging unfairly. This philosophy is again reiterated when Yeshua teaches, quote, therefore, all things, whatever you desire that men should do to you, so also you should do to them. For this is the law and the prophets, end quote. He says, this one sentence sums up the two greatest commandments, love, yep, and love your neighbor. And the new commandment given by Yeshua at the Last Supper, quote, you should love one another according as I loved you. Some claim, writes Daryl, that it is unachievable to love everyone, yet Yeshua lived what he taught, quote, that we must keep our hearts free from resentment, no matter how we may be mistreated, to practice the golden rule, even in small measure, makes us happy, helps us in our business, and in every relation in life. It is the most practical thing in the world, end quote. Okay. Daryl says, if following the golden rule is the most practical thing in the world for an individual, why do so many people make exceptions for the group? The individual doesn't have a right to take from his neighbor. However, most followers of Yeshua concede that a group known as the government does have that right. What is the difference? Yeshua doesn't make a distinction or exception between the individual and the group. Many so-called Christians claim the exception comes not from Yeshua, but from the Apostle Paul's letter to the church in Rome. Let every soul be subject to higher authorities, for there is no authority except from God, but the existing authorities have been ordained by God, so that the one resisting authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and the ones opposing will receive judgment to themselves, end quote. Well, Daryl says, Chuck Baldwin asks, do our Christian friends who use these verses to teach that we should not oppose any political leader really believe that civil magistrates have unlimited authority to do anything they want without opposition? I doubt that they truly believe that. Absolutely. Now, I was bringing up the point about Matthew, which I think is a very, very key point. If you look at Matthew and his relationship with Christ, Matthew was, according to About Religion, a tax collector driven by greed until Christ chose him as a disciple. We first meet Matthew in his tax booth on the main highway. Well, we'll continue this. I know we're coming up against the clock. And then we'll hear from a politician who tells us she's religious. We'll return. Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Oh, yeah. Good stuff coming back from commercials. Bringing it up a notch, Liberty Conspiracy Radio back with you on LRN.FM. Good to be here, one and all. Well, we weren't with you the past couple of times. We tried, but it was just technical things were getting in the way. It was a big pain in the neck. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Nice to be here again. And don't forget, our podcasts are available at Podomatic and at iTunes. Of course, they're free. And we'd love for you to spread the word about them. And while you're at it, look up my friend's podcast, Brian Keene. It is The Horror Show with Brian Keene. I think you'll really enjoy them. And Brian Dan's a really inventive guy, great stories, his writing is fantastic, and he's just a good all-around dude, and he's pro-freedom. So remember, The Horror Show with Brian Keene when you're looking up Liberty Conspiracy on iTunes. All right, I am LG Grande, buenos whatever, and if you want to find me on Facebook, it is listed as LG Grande, but we also have our Liberty Conspiracy Facebook page over there, so I hope you'll check that out. And the bulk of the program tonight, just about the bulk of the program tonight, we spent about the first half hour talking about a couple breaking stories regarding how much people have to spend to actually start working for themselves rather than working for government. That sort of stuff, how much they have to shell out to the government before they get to keep the fruits of their labor. In other words, how much you are enslaved by politicians, by the state in the abstract. So we talked about that, this being April. We also went into April 15th, just a little bit, you know, tax day. Oh, how wonderful. But this being Easter day, now Easter night, I got to play a little Big Dipper, Easter Eve. And I hope you'll look up their music on YouTube. They're a very, very great band from Boston. Very cool. And they didn't like, you know, just shine like beacons the way the Pixies did. But at the time that the Pixies were just starting up, there were a lot of really cool bands. And it seems to have been a bubble in Boston history when it was sort of after the Cars had hit it, right after Human Sexual Response. Well, pretty much from the tail end of Human Sexual Response, then you had Mission of Burma. Then one of the members of Mission of Burma formed Volcano Sons. Members of Human Sexual Response formed the Zulus. Then you had bands like Slaughter Shack, The Five, Condo Pygmies. The Titanics, who are now pretty well known as the upper crust. They're the ones that get dressed up as dandies and stuff, and they sing about how tough it is being really wealthy and stuff like that. And they sound a lot like AC/DC and the Pixies and Big Dipper. So it was a great period. There have been a couple periods since then, still sort of waiting for that same sort of massive amount of great bands to come out of Boston. It was really an amazing time to check out bands, and it's not just a sort of a subjective thing from my standpoint either. I think if you talk to a lot of people who are in Boston now, they've seen little bubbles, but nothing's really, you know, coalesced the way that it was back when Big Dipper was playing. Play Big Dipper Easter Eve, and I was talking about the teachings of Christ as a historical figure anyway, and his experience in running into certain people and changing some of their lives, and the importance of individual choice, individual volition to make moral choices. That's one of the key things for pretty much any religion. Sadly, some religions want to be spread by military force, which is real trouble, but Christianity, as it was spread by Jesus, is not the case. And one can take Christ as a religious figure, or if one wants to take him as a historical, political, sociological figure, that's fine too. But either way, some people claim that Christ was a socialist. Other people claim that Christ was a small government person. Well, we are here to claim that Christ was most likely an anarchist. And as I mentioned, logically, if you're looking at it, there's supposed to be no authority over God. You are supposed to be relating to God and his commandments and his teachings. And so how can you make yourself conform to these things and save your soul and be good to your neighbor and love thy neighbor if you are doing it not because you believe it, but because you will be punished by the state if you don't? And in most cases, the state has to engage in the very activities that individuals are forbidden from doing. So how is it that you're supposed to support the state when you can't do it yourself, as Darryl Perry mentions in his book, right? The Anarcho Teachings of Yeshua. So I just want to look at Matthew for a minute. As I mentioned over, if you go to About Religion, just, you know, a quick thumbnail, Matthew was a tax collector, right? He became a disciple. So Christ chose him as a disciple, and you first run into Matthew on the road. He's got a booth on the main highway, and he's collecting taxes, duties on imported goods. What were we talking about last hour? That the tax foundation, as good as it did, didn't include regulations telling people how they're going to do their business, and tariffs on foreign goods, which also increase the cost for everybody, right? See, and this is something where people shouldn't distinguish, well, the businessman. No, the businessman and the consumer are working towards the same thing, to save the consumer money. Because if the businessman doesn't do that and provide a product that's good, someone else is going to step in. It's the competitive market. By the way, later in the program, I'm just going to finish this off. Later in the program, I do want to spend, if I can, a little bit of time on gun control and also to talk about this Indiana thing. Because this also has to do with freedom and the individual making his own choice. This thing about whether or not companies can turn away doing business for homosexuals or so on and so forth if they have a religious qualm about it. Whether it's religion or it's just your mood for the day or whatever it might be, I'll mention it now just briefly. Freedom of association also connotes the freedom to exclude. And we've done a podcast about this before. We'll talk about that in a little while. So you run into Matthew, to get back to the Bible. You run into Matthew. He's got a tax booth. He's a tariff collector, just like we were talking about with the government, right? And he's collecting duties on imported goods brought in by farmers and merchants and caravans. Now, under the Roman Empire system, according to About Religion, Matthew would have paid all the taxes in advance, then collected from the citizens and travelers to reimburse himself. Interesting, huh? Their decisions were enforced by Roman soldiers, and people could not object. So what does Christ do? He goes over to him and says, no, this is wrong. Right? Now, some people say, well, Matthew was different than the other tax collectors. Well, Matthew is forcing people to pay for him. Give him money. Right? Is that right or wrong? That's wrong. That's just not the way you operate. Correct? Absolutely. Now, I know we only have a couple minutes left, but if you think about it, you think about, as I mentioned, a lot of the politicians who either pay lip service to their religion, they walk around with the Bible. Some people are massive religious hypocrites. They call themselves preachers, and yet they want massive increases in taxes and massive redistribution of wealth and all sorts of things like that. Some people claim that they're religious people, and they engage in some of the most nefarious and evil military conquests from the United States doing these things that have been seen in decades, and yet they claim they're religious people. And some people support these folks. It's a very strange thing. Even back in the 1800s and during the colonial era, people would excuse doing terrible things to the American Indians by saying, well, you know, we have to convert them to Christianity. You know, it's like a subtle sort of crusade sort of thing, you know? So, how do we look at contemporary politicians? I'll play you a quote from one contemporary politician when we return. We're going to get to it, I promise. Wait till you hear. We continue, Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Welcome to the conspiracy, one and all. Yeah, yeah. Okay, more new singles have been released by Muse, by the way, if you get the opportunity to check those out. Also, new records released by The Prodigy and Shriekback. So if you get an opportunity, go to their websites, The Prodigy's website and Shriekback's website. The Prodigy's just came out on March 30th. Shriekback came out a couple weeks ago. And, yeah, both very, very good records. And I want to also highly recommend the album 2012 by Killing Joke. That's MMXII. Okay, check it out. MMXII, if you want to look it up. It's just an unbelievable record, man. So, so good. All right, I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Good to have you here. I'm just looking over my notes here. I want to mention one more thing about this whether Christ was a socialist thing. There's a very good piece published by FEE.org. I think it was Leonard Reed put this one out. And there's an interview on YouTube with Leonard about this very topic as to whether or not Christ was a socialist. It's FEE.org, Foundation for Economic Education. And he just mentioned something here. He says, wait a minute. Here it is. Didn't Jesus say he came to uphold the law, you ask? Yes, in Matthew 5:17-20, he declares, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. That's his quote. And end quote. In Luke 24:44, he declares this same sort of thing when he says, quote, everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses. It's a little different here, isn't it? The prophets and the Psalms.
So, in other words, he was not saying whatever laws the government passes, I'm all for. He was speaking specifically of the Mosaic Law, primarily the Ten Commandments and the prophecies of his own coming. So there's a lot more there as well. So the topic is whether or not Christ was a socialist, or I believe he was an anarchist. And I mentioned that we often hear a lot of politicians. I mentioned this a couple times, so I'll get to the point quickly. We hear a lot of politicians telling us that we're not living our lives properly, and that certain people have more than they should. And yet these are the very same people who will claim that they're religious people. They will quote from the Bible, right, as if there's some great messianic mission to their American government dictates. Let's hear a conversation while we have the opportunity between a man named Jan Helfeld and Nancy Pelosi, who I believe is one of the worst culprits on this. And then I'll give you a couple little sort of follow-ups in our last segment in the program. This is a conversation about whether or not people should be told by politicians how much they should be paying their customers. It's an interview, which she didn't really like too much. Jan Helfeld with Nancy Pelosi a few years ago on a seeming double standard she might have.
How much do you pay your interns?
How much do you pay your interns?
Well, it depends on the program that they're part of.
Mm-hmm. But how much do they get paid?
They don't get paid by the hour. They get paid to come in, say, for a summer or something like that.
What is their hourly rate? Is it below minimum wage?
It isn't an hourly rate. It's a stipend for a period of time that they come in.
But calculated.
Well, they do fine many of them would come in and be interns as part of their education. So
but
the stipend for them
is a stipend more than the minimum wage or less?
Yes, it's more.
It's more than the minimum wage. So you paid all of your interns more than minimum wage when they work here?
Those who have come here to work for a stipend. Some have come as part of their school program where they get credit for working in an office.
And how much you pay them?
If some of them come in and they, as they say, it's part of their school, they are not getting paid. Their part of their education is to work with us, and we train them in what we do here in government, and they get be part of the legislation that we're putting forth. But by and large, we try to encourage them. We try to reach out to those young people who need the stipend so that they can take advantage of what opportunities exist here, whether it's the LBJ Foundation or a scholarship or the Italian American Foundation. Different categories have and we can only have a limited number of interns.
Yes. Didn't you say that all services were worth at least $5.15, and here there is a service that's being rendered to you personally, which you are not compensating at all?
I said to you, unless someone decides that they want to volunteer, and you cannot underestimate the volunteer
effort. So if somebody wants to volunteer to work for McDonald's at $4 an hour, is that all right?
No,
or is that illegal? Is that illegal? Would you prosecute that person, right?
No, I wouldn't prosecute them, go to work for McDonald's for nothing. They go there because they need to make a living.
But if somebody wanted to make the decision that they were willing to work for McDonald's at $4 an hour, it was in their best interest, that would be illegal, would it not?
No, it's not a question of being
illegal. Would it be illegal or
not? I don't think that McDonald's would want them there. They would be responsible for them. When somebody comes in here to volunteer in our office, we are responsible for them. We must supervise them. We must train them. We must educate them. It is a responsibility that we have.
If McDonald's had a program where they had, you, in order to be a McDonald's employee, you had to be an intern and work without pay for a month, would that be illegal?
I'm not sure. I don't know. McDonald's, you know, is under a separate law called the Kroc Law. I think all of them are under that law.
It doesn't matter. Any employer that's hiring minimum wage earners, if they had a program where everybody that had to work for a whole month for free as an intern first, before they hired them, would that be illegal?
Yes, in my view, it would be. I think they should pay them
but
as they train
in
them.
In your case, you can hire people for free as interns. It's not illegal. What's the difference?
Well,
you're a congresswoman enterprise?
No, but if you talk about the Red Cross, if you talk about the Catholic Church, the Methodist Church, the Baptist Church, if you talk about any organizations where people want to make a contribution, whether it's to their country or to their church or whether it's to their community, that and they have the right to do that.
Or to their private enterprise, like McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, right?
Well, I think it's an absolutely silly example.
But
you know, if I may be so bold.
Is it silly the idea that certain services are valued at less than $4.25? In other words,
I think services
that are provided to you at $4.25 because you don't pay them $4.25.
Well, I didn't say I didn't pay them. I say that we reach out to the young people who want to come in here and give them a stipend, and we try to get those young people.
How much is a stipend?
It depends on the length of time that they are here, but it certainly comes up higher than the minimum wage. And let me say this. Anytime we have these young people come in, and we have a great deal of competition among the young people who want to come in, because they want to learn about government, they want
to
get credit for their courses.
They want to
get credit for their courses.
Some of them you hire and you don't pay them minimum wage, right?
No, we do pay the minimum wage.
All of them?
We do pay the minimum wage.
All of them?
We do. There are some people who do not want to have, they want to come and go as they, because they want to be here 1 hour a week to work on a specific issue. So they may not meet the standards of getting a stipend of a certain scholarship.
So you don't pay them all minimum wage.
You know what?
So those services,
I have to go now.
I believe you are not willing to pay $4.25 an hour.
I want to say this directly into the camera.
See,
I have tried.
All right. I know we're going to be coming up to our commercials, and I would love to be able to play for you the last segment of this interview, because it's just amazing. And this is from a number of years ago, of course, when the minimum wage, as dictated and ordered by the federal government, was different. It was lower. But it is amazing to see how Nancy Pelosi shuts this down and, in fact, calls a guard in to have Jan removed. Some people pronounce it Jan, J-A-N, but I think it's Jan. I think it's probably Dutch. And it's just amazing. And Jan is a small government libertarian type guy, right? There's a very interesting debate between him and Walter Block on YouTube, and Walter Block is just, you know, he's great, and Block carries the anarchist point of view, and but this is a person, Nancy Pelosi, who goes to her Sunday services and does all these things, and evidently believes that Christ was quite a guy, and yet you had better do what she says, but not what she does. Isn't that interesting? All right, when we return, I want to take a look at the voluntary association in Indiana and maybe get into the gun control debate. We'll talk about this when we return. We continue at Liberty Conspiracy Radio, LRN.FM. If you're streaming us, thank you for doing so. All right, I'm Gardner Goldsmith. I'm still looking at some of this stuff about Christ. Very interesting stuff. If you get a chance, look for that article at fee.org, Leonard Reed. Really good article. It was released just about 7 days ago, I think. Let me see here. Lawrence Reed. Lawrence Reed, March 5th. Yeah, so it was a month ago now. Wow, it's great. Really interesting stuff here. He has one here. He says, in Luke 12:13-15, Jesus is confronted with a redistribution request. A man with a grievance approaches him and demands, quote, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me," end quote. Jesus replies this way, quote, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions," end quote. That's pretty cool. I like that. Good stuff. And as I mentioned, you've got Nancy Pelosi, who is pretty much the exact opposite of the Golden Rule, wants to take people's stuff and tell people how they want to live. And a number of years ago, Jan Helfeld had this conversation with her and exposed her double standard, how she wants to tell other people how they should run their businesses, despite the fact that those are their businesses, not hers. And she doesn't even pay her employees minimum wage. Here's how it went. I want to finish this off. I think you'll enjoy this. This is fun. Here's how it went. She tries to address the camera. She's like, put the camera on me.
I had to make myself available to the bottom line, Rational Solutions
Network. Well, let's get
Network.
To the bottom line.
And I believe that There is in this country a large body of people who devalue the work of people who work in the system. Some have come to me and said, you'd be surprised what profit we could make if only we had very low wages. I said, no, I wouldn't be surprised.
Congressman, are you giving a speech?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I give you a chance to
comment. I have made myself available. I have answered your questions.
No, you have evaded my...
And I think that you came into our office under a false pretense.
No, I think you've evaded the questions that I've asked by making a speech about other things. Let me give you what I think is the bottom line.
Please,
let me give you what I think is the bottom line.
Half an hour is up.
You refuse to answer the questions. I just want to tell you what I think is the bottom line.
You really made a mistake.
Why did I make a mistake? What is the mistake?
Because I think that if you wanted to have a discussion about the minimum wage, you would have asked your questions. We would have moved to other aspects of it.
Let's discuss it.
One question through it. I don't have any more time. My time is up.
Do you think that it would harm you to answer my questions?
This interview is over. Would you please dismantle the cameras?
Excuse me. Do you think
Terry?
It would harm you?
Terry?
Do you think it would harm you to answer my questions?
Terry, will you call the guard? Because this interview is over. Okay?
You're going to call the guard on us?
No, I'm just telling you. It's over now. You either accept the fact that the interview is over or not. Okay? The interview is over.
Now, if he were in government, he could tell her, no, the interview is not over because I'm going to make you continue to talk. I want to talk more, and you're going to talk more, right?
And the first spot, no.
That's just awesome. That is awesome. And it's from a number of years ago. Just terrific stuff. And that is the sort of hypocrisy that you see so much. In fact, just a quick notice. For more hypocrisy, you can go to the stories that we have posted at libertyconspiracy.com. Here's a quick one. If you heard about the recent arrest of some women in a supposed terrorist bomb plot, you might not have heard what I suspected and has turned out to be absolutely right. The bomb plot was just like about 20 of the last 22 that the FBI has supposedly uncovered was started by the FBI. And this is the headline from the InfoWars story. It's terrific. Dianne Feinstein demands that the internet be censored after the FBI uncovers its own bomb plot. Check this out. Very good piece, and it's absolutely right. Okay, it's got a picture of the wonderful Dianne Feinstein, also from California, just like Nancy Pelosi. Kit Daniels writes this for InfoWars.com. I'll get into the gun thing in a minute. I think I've got time. And then I'll talk about the Indiana thing tomorrow night. After the FBI, quote, uncovered another one of its own self-orchestrated terrorist plots leading to the arrest of two women, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, demanded online censorship of the, quote, extremist literature the FBI provided to the suspects. And she didn't mention that it was provided by the FBI, but it says this. Feinstein called for online suppression of the popular counterculture publication The Anarchist Cookbook, as well as an Al-Qaeda publication, which critics characterized as a slippery slope leading to Chinese-style internet censorship. Absolutely right. Quote, I am particularly struck that the alleged bombers made use of online bomb-making guides like The Anarchist Cookbook and Inspire Magazine, end quote. Feinstein said, despite an FBI undercover agent admitting he provided those materials to the suspects. Quote, these documents are not, in my view, protected by the First Amendment and should be removed from the internet. I love how she does it, in my view. Oh my God. Critics were quick to label Feinstein's statement as an attack on the First Amendment. Yeah, no kidding. Absolutely. For what it's worth, Dianne Feinstein's view is wrong, Mike Masnick with Tech Dirt wrote. The Anarchist Cookbook is very much protected by the First Amendment. Absolutely right. But I just think it's just amazing that this woman wants to call for this sort of censorship when it was her own government agents that provided the document. Amazing. It's just blindness, hypocrisy, stupidity, ignorance, arrogance, conceit. just unbelievable. Okay, now let's get into this final story, this very, very sad story out of Africa. And it's very, very tragic, of course, if you heard about what happened in Kenya. The Al-Shabaab terror group attacked a college in Kenya on Thursday, and 147 people were killed. Now, what's really amazing is that the mass media will not report that Kenya is supposedly a gun-free zone. They have massive, very strict gun control. Only the government agents can have the guns. And the fact that the head of Interpol has now openly stated, perhaps we should consider having more civilians be armed. Yeah. This is a little InfoWars stuff. Very impressive stuff.
Yesterday, we brought you the news about a mass shooting, a campus shooting in Kenya. The terrorist group Al-Shabaab opened fire at Garissa University College and killed nearly 150 people. Fox News reported the men were going door to door asking people their religion, and if they answered they were a Christian, they shot them on the spot. The first responders engaged the terrorists but were flat out outgunned. Al-Shabaab is the same group that
there were only two on the whole campus.
Attacked a mall in Nairobi years ago, killing many innocent people, and now they're threatening attacks here on U.S. soil, threatening the Mall of America. DHS has investigated the group and found them to be no credible threat. And I hope they're right. But if they're wrong, I'm very happy that we live in a country where we have concealed carriers.
He kept pulling the charging handle and hitting the side.
The break in gunfire allowed Mealy to pull out his own gun.
I saw someone in the back of the Charlotte move, and I knew that if I fired and missed, I could end up hitting them.
So Mealy took cover inside a nearby store.
I'm not beating myself up because I didn't shoot him. But I know that after he saw me, I think the last shot he fired was the one that he used on himself.
The gunman was dead.
And in the Clackamas shooting, the mere sight of armed opposition forced the gunman to turn the gun upon himself. I guess he didn't want to take the chance of being taken alive. And now we're all asking the same question, how do we combat these mass shootings? Well, the chief of Interpol has come out and said, well, maybe we should just arm the citizens. The people should be able to protect themselves. And I do agree. Now, am I trying to put a firearm in every dorm room in America? No. But if you're somebody of age, of sound mind and body, and you don't have any criminal proceedings, you know, I think you should be able to go out and purchase a gun to keep yourself safe.
Absolutely. Jakar Jackson, good job. InfoWars. Remember, the Alex Jones channel is available on YouTube. They do great work covering the news. They've got amazing people. Jakar does fantastic work. You've got Paul Joseph Watson and his brother. They report from over in the UK. You've got Joe Biggs, David Knight, Leanne McAdoo. Just a great team of people. I'm not even including everybody, but they really have been doing great work. And it's terrific to be able to communicate with these people. Occasionally I'll tweet something, and Leanne McAdoo will retweet or, you know, that sort of thing, or favorite it. It's just good. They're tapped into people. They're more conspiratorial in some cases than I am, and maybe some of them are anarchists, maybe some aren't. They're probably more small government constitutionalist conservatives or whatever. But boy, I got to hand it to their news team. Boy, great job to those guys, and great job to you. Thank you for keeping in touch. We'll see you tomorrow night. Be seeing you.